Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Burrow is changing everything you know about furniture. For one thing, every single order ships free right to your door. Each piece of Burrow furniture is designed with purpose and constructed from premium materials. It comes in easy-to-move boxes and can be assembled by one person. No tools necessary. And disassembled just as easily when you move. Save up to 50% during Burrow's biggest sale of the year. Plus, get up to $1,000 off your purchase at burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Get the best workout with the best-kept secret in fitness. Hydro, the state-of-the-art at-home rower. Hydro engages 86% of your muscles, arms, legs, core, delivering the ultimate full-body workout in just 20 minutes. From advanced to beginner, Hydro has over 4,000 classes that are shot all over the world and are taught by Olympians and world-class athletes. For a 30-day risk-free trial with free standard shipping, go to Hydro.com and enjoy up to $500 off during the holidays. That's HYDROW.com.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 15th of November, these are the main headlines. Washington backs up what Israel has long claimed, that Hamas is using hospitals as command centres and weapons dumps. So where does that leave the hundreds of patients and people sheltering in them? The British Prime Minister faces a stinging tirade from a sacked minister, and Sri Lanka's Supreme Court finds the former president partially responsible for the country's economic collapse. Also in this podcast.
The main advantage of this AI approach is that it's extremely accurate. It learns from decades of data. It doesn't solve a complex equation, so it can make predictions extremely fast on a very small machine.
We hear how AI could predict the weather. For several weeks now, Israel has said many of the hospitals in Gaza have a dual function. Above ground, they're treating patients, but underneath, in a warren of tunnels, they are Hamas command centres and weapons stores. It's something Hamas has consistently denied, but now the United States says it has intelligence to support those Israeli claims. Sabrina Singh is the Pentagon's deputy spokesperson.
They have tunnels underneath these hospitals, and so Hamas and PIJ members operate a command and control node from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. They have weapons stored there and are prepared to respond to an Israeli military operation against the facility.
Well, the reference to PIJ there stands for Palestinian Islamic Jihad, another militant group in Gaza. The US National Security spokesman, John Kirby, has said that using the Al-Shifa Hospital in this way was a war crime, but it did not lessen Israel's responsibility to protect civilians. I've been speaking to our correspondent Nick Beek, who gave us the latest on the situation across Gaza.
The Israelis say that their operations continue. Just tonight, the defence minister here in Israel has said that the campaign will go on for many, many months. So that's an indication that there appears to be no imminent dialing down of what's been happening. I know, for example, there was one particular airstrike in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. At least 7 people were killed in that. Israel says it continues to target Hamas, says it's not aiming for civilians. Just a few miles away from that particular refugee camp is the Al-Shifa Hospital. And day, sort of hour by hour, Nick, we've got more information that's trickled out from the hospital, and all of it pretty bleak. One medic telling the BBC today that more than 200 bodies have now been buried in what is a mass grave. And there is also a concern, one other doctor was telling us, about the risk of infection from the corpses at the site. Also, I was talking to one charity, Doctors Without Borders, and they were saying that one of their surgeons treated 3 people yesterday for shotgun injuries, or certainly sniper injuries. And they say that they believe Israeli forces had pulled the trigger. Israel, as I say, denies that it fires towards the hospital or at civilians there.
Meanwhile, Nick, pressure is continuing to build on Benjamin Netanyahu, isn't it, over the hostages. There's a march in Israel at the moment, relatives meeting the Red Cross in Geneva as well.
Yeah, that's right. Earlier on today, actually, a group of the relatives of some of the 240 hostages set off from Tel Aviv, and we're told that they're going to be carrying out this five-day march. They're heading here for Jerusalem. They're going to the office of the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and they're demanding that he does more, that really he changes the strategy of this war. Because remember, at the moment, the Prime Minister says that the best way of getting the hostages back is to intensify the ground operation in Gaza to take out more Hamas fighters. And at that point, in a position of strength, the hostages could be freed. Lots of the families of the hostages say that's completely the wrong strategy. And actually, the focus should be on trying to retrieve them, first of all, and then going for Hamas afterwards. But at the moment, there seems to be no aligning of those two different positions. All the while, Nick, we hear this swirl of information about possible deals. But so far, there's no clear sign that one may be reached anytime soon.
That was Nick Beak. The World Health Organization has said that more than half of Gaza's hospitals are non-functional, and those that are still open have barely enough supplies to sustain them. An estimated 160 children are expected to be born every day in Gaza, even as many women are cut off from safe delivery services. Working with freelance journalist Maddy Fati in Gaza, our correspondent Yogita Limai reports from Jerusalem on what it's like to give birth in Gaza.
A one-day-old baby boy is brought into the neonatal intensive care unit of Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza. He's still to be named by his parents, who fled Gaza City in the north after warnings from the Israeli military. Born prematurely under the stress of war, he needs help to breathe. Next to him is a four-day-old girl in critical condition. She's on a ventilator, and her tiny hand has been attached to a drip. She doesn't have a name either, and they're running out of medicines to treat her. The incubators are still on at this hospital, but the fighting is drawing closer. Nurse Farda Alavda points to another baby in the corner, sleeping soundly. 2 weeks old, his name is Hassan Mishmash.
He was rescued from under the rubble, cradled in his mother's arms. Both his parents have been killed. Since his parents are no longer alive, all of us nurses have taken on the responsibility of caring for him.
Outside in the hospital's compound, new tents are being erected to shelter those fleeing northern Gaza. Asma has recently arrived here with three small children. She's pregnant and walked for more than 15 miles. Plastic and cotton sheets make the walls and roof of her makeshift tent. She sleeps on the ground. The plastic sheet her children sleep on isn't big enough to fit them all.
So many women suffered miscarriages due to the terrifying sound of the explosions. I was scared I would lose my baby. Sometimes I felt like I couldn't feel my baby move. I had to carry my child and our bags. My children have been exposed to such horrors. Dead bodies, cars bombed with people inside.
Hundreds of thousands have been displaced in Gaza, crowding in shelters in hospitals and schools. In the cities and towns they've left, they had homes and jobs. Now they're struggling for a bit of food for their families. In one corner of the shelter, a little girl bangs a tap. Frustrated, she then puts her finger into its nozzle, hoping some water will come out to fill a small plastic bottle she's carrying. None does. There's an acute shortage of water. Amidst it all, Ola Abu Ali gave birth at the shelter.
My baby is only 2 weeks old, born right here in the school during the war. We don't have access to food, milk or diapers. There isn't enough to eat, and there is no water. My children have diarrhea. My baby has stomach inflammation, and whenever I breastfeed him, he vomits.
Kifa Al-Asar's baby is even younger, a girl born 4 days ago. Kifa was heavily pregnant when she was forced to flee her home.
I've had to run more than once, walking under the constant threat of being bombed. I saw people's bodies being ripped apart. I faced extreme exhaustion and was scared for my baby's life. At hospital, I got no painkillers while giving birth.
It is a painful time in Gaza. It's excruciating for new mothers.
Yogita Limai reporting. The weather is one of the most complex natural systems on Earth. Learning to forecast it accurately has transformed the way we live, work, and undoubtedly saved many lives. Traditional weather forecasts involve huge amounts of data and use some of the biggest supercomputers in the world. But research just published shows that artificial intelligence can actually forecast more accurately, far more quickly than what's come before. Our climate editor, Justin Rowlott, is following the story.
It's quite hard to measure how effective it is because there are so many variables that come out of a weather forecast because it's trying to do so much. It's trying to describe the pattern of weather around the whole world. So they had a couple of examples for me, one of which was looking at tracking big storm cyclones, which it's particularly good at. And they said, look at Cyclone Lee. This was a big storm that developed in the Caribbean, but then struck the Atlantic coast of the US and Canada. And the AI models accurately predicted its path 9 days ahead. The traditional forecasting models only did 6 days ahead. So they were saying, look at that, and that shows you get more warning to kind of, if you like, batten down the hatches and protect your communities. So it's really good at some things like predicting cyclones. Another way of looking at it is to look at the output of the models, so these variables that the models create, and look how accurate it is on those. They said if you look across 1,400 of these variables, the sort of key ones, it's better than the gold standard weather models 90% of the time. And if you take the top of the atmosphere, the troposphere out, which is kind of irrelevant to most of us because we care about the weather, where we are at the bottom of the atmosphere on the Earth's surface, then it's like 99% better. So the performance levels are really high. I have to say, though, the granularity, the level of detail is much lower with these AI models as they stand at the moment.
OK, and they've been talking to you, the people who've developed this, about what it means in practice.
Yeah, so I said to this guy, Remy Lam, he was one of the key designers, works for Google DeepMind, which is Google's kind of AI arm. And this is all open source stuff. So they're publishing this and allowing anyone to use it and do what they want with it. So it's kind of generous science that that DeepMind are doing. And this is what Remy Lam had to say when I said, what are the advantages of this approach?
The main advantage of this AI approach is that it's extremely accurate. It learns from decades of data and is able to be more accurate than the industry gold standard. It doesn't solve a complex equation, so it can make prediction extremely fast on a very small machine.
And accurate means potentially life-saving.
I mean, we think of weather forecasts like, what's the weather going to be like this afternoon? Should I wear a coat? And they're really good for that. But they're also really good for extreme events. If you've got a big storm developing, you kind of want to know about it so you can warn people either to stay at home, get down and take cover, or actually to evacuate people in really big storms. So weather forecasts can save lives.
We are seeing, though, increasingly unpredictable events like the recent hurricane that hit Acapulco with practically no warning whatsoever. AI is going to be quite difficult to predict those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. But actually, traditional weather forecasts aren't very good at predicting those things because they're new and because they're very localised. So this rapid intensification, it's called, of storms is something that's actually we haven't seen a great deal of, but is forecast to become a bigger problem as the world warms up. And it's really because you've got warmer ocean water, warmer air, which means more energy, which means you can create bigger storms. The storm you're talking about, Hurricane Otis, was really spectacular. So, I mean, there were weather forecasters talking about going to bed overnight and it was a tropical cyclone. It was like a noteworthy storm, but nothing to worry about. Woke up in the morning, it was a Category 5 hurricane. It was actually the strongest hurricane ever to hit the Pacific coast of Mexico, and it developed in 24 hours. That is really unusual. But it is hard to predict those things anyway, just because we don't have the detailed measurements that would allow us to look at the way that the heat's propagating the storms and creating these really big storms.
Justin Rowlett. Just a day ago, the British media was buzzing with Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's radical government reshuffle. What a cause such a storm was his decision to fire his troublesome Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, as well as the stunning return to government as Foreign Secretary of the former Prime Minister, David Cameron. But any hope Mr. Sunak might have had of ushering in a period of calm has been shattered. The reason? A scathing letter from Ms. Braverman in which she tears to pieces Mr. Sunak's leadership. Our political correspondent, Rob Watson, has been speaking to me about it all.
I've been covering British politics on and off for over 30 years, Nick, and I don't think I've ever read a more vicious, stinging attack from an outgoing minister than this. I mean, it is quite extraordinary because it attacks Rishi Sunak as a man, as a politician and as a leader. As a man by saying that he'd betrayed pledges to her, as a politician saying he'd attempted all these resets which had failed, and as a leader by saying that in the face of growing anti-Semitism and extremism in the wake of the Hamas attacks, he had been weak and uncertain. I mean, it just doesn't get more stinging and vicious than that.
Certainly doesn't. And there's been a lot of muttering about her ambitions as a leader herself. Is this clear evidence of that, do you think?
I think it is, but I think more interestingly, perhaps, it's a sort of taste of what might happen if the Conservatives lose the next general election, and that is that there'll be this sort of almighty battle for the soul of the party, those who want it to be a really sort of full-throated, full-blooded, a right-wing party. I mean, that would, of course, be Suella Braverman, and those who want it to be a little bit more centrist. It's a taste, perhaps, of the battle to come.
And all this row really is just going to do nothing for the attempts from Mr. Sunak to tighten that gap between him and Labour at the moment.
It's worth pointing that out, Nick. I mean, they are consistently something like 20 percentage points behind after 13 years in office. I mean, it really does look, unless something turns up, that they're headed for a hammering. And I think when people see things like this, they will look at the Conservative Party and think, you know, if it was a marriage, it would be in deep trouble. If it was a relationship, people would be looking at it and thinking, my goodness, these people need help not re-electing.
Rob Watson. Coming up later on.
You can hear it when you're lying in bed at night time.
It's like vibrating noise, real loud one at night, but 12, 1 every night.
The strange noise that's keeping residents in a northern Irish town awake at night.
Burrow is changing everything you know about furniture. For one thing, every single order ships free right to your door. Each piece of Burrow furniture is designed with purpose and constructed from premium materials. It comes in easy-to-move boxes and can be assembled by one person. No tools necessary. And disassembled just as easily when you move. Save up to 50% during Burrow's biggest sale of the year. Plus, get up to $1,000 off your purchase at burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
How do we navigate in space?
Are humans naturally clean and tidy?
What exactly is this quantum computer?
Can smell enhance your appetite?
Crowd Science is the podcast that takes your science questions and goes in search of the answers.
My question for Crowd Science is, are artistic brains different?
Stick with me, because there's been some really fascinating research into this.
That's Crowd Science from the BBC World Service.
I love this question.
Just search for Crowd Science wherever you found this podcast.
Wow.
Finland says an unusual number of asylum seekers have been arriving at its 1,300-kilometre-long border with Russia. The authorities said about 60 people had sought refuge since early Monday, compared with 91 arrivals over the previous 3 months. Finland's Interior Minister, Mari Rantanen, told reporters that Russia was allowing people from third countries to travel illegally without the right papers.
In recent months, according to the border guard's observations, the number of asylum seekers has increased on the eastern border, and there have been changes in the nationalities of arrivals. The number of asylum seekers is still relatively low, but the number has significantly increased in the short term. The actions of Russian authorities have changed such that travelling from Russia to Finland is permitted despite document deficiencies. Therefore, this is about illegal entry.
Charlie Salonius-Pasternak is a defence and security researcher at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. There's clearly an increase in the rate of immigration, but still only numbering in the dozens. My colleague Tim Franks asked, how big a deal is this for Finland?
They're seen as a harbinger of what could come. The Finnish authorities are remembering what happened in 2015-16, when hundreds and eventually some thousands came across the border in very much the same way, with Russian authorities just letting these people through. Finnish politicians and the authorities are being very proactive. Of course, 30, 40 people are no problem to Finland in terms of taking care of people like that.
What level of proof has the Finnish government been able to bring to say, we know that this is the Russians getting up to mischief?
Publicly, what the Finnish authorities have said is they know that their Russian counterparts are letting through people. They've changed their behavior quite dramatically. Groups of these individuals being carted in vans and the Russian border authorities helping these individuals onwards.
I guess it's not being viewed as a coincidence in Finland that this is all happening after the country recently became a member of NATO, the Western Military Alliance.
That is the overall framework. There was an expectation, in fact, that Russia would do more, but now there's this whole basket of other deniable hybrid tools. Russia doesn't have one master plan, but there is certainly a desire to see the destabilization of societies, countries in Europe, maybe internal political wrangling caused by migration and things like that. So if Russia can aid and abet in this, then it's quite cheap for it to do. And at the same time, send a signal to much of the rest of Europe that we have lots of migrants who we may choose to push onward.
That was Charlie Salonius-Pasternak. The term economic crisis hardly does justice to what people in Sri Lanka have had to endure recently. Last year, surging fuel prices led to basics like bread trebling in price for a while. There were violent protests on the streets, parliament was stormed, and the president resigned. Well, now the country's Supreme Court has found that the former president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, his brother Mahinda, and other top officials were partially responsible for the economic collapse. I asked the BBC's South Asia regional editor, Ambarasan Itarajan, what this ruling means.
It's a symbolic judgment by the Sri Lankan Supreme Court. The Sri Lankan advocacy group Transparency International Sri Lanka, they approached the court saying the fundamental rights of the people have been violated because of the ongoing economic crisis, and the people suffered heavily. So the Supreme Court has ruled that the former president, the Gotabaya Rajapaksa, his elder brother Mahinda, who was also a president before and he was the prime minister later on, and the younger one, Basil Rajapaksa, he was the finance minister, and two central bank, former central bank governors and two other officials were held responsible for the economic crisis. Since it is a symbolic judgment, they did not order any punishment or asking them to pay millions of dollars or anything. It only said since the advocacy group was asking for responsibility, so they only asked to pay $450 as legal costs for the petitioners. So the Supreme Court simply reiterated the view that the Rajapaksa brothers, when they were in power, they did not do much to stop this economic slide.
Ambarasan, will this symbolic judgment, as you call it, be enough for people? There must be a lot of anger amongst Sri Lankans still.
There is a lot of anger in Sri Lanka at the moment, but what many people would say is they are helpless because after Mr. Rajapaksa left, Ranil Wickremesinghe, he took over as president and he got the money from IMF to kickstart the economy. But in the meantime, the prices have gone up quite exorbitantly and they are struggling. In fact, thousands of Sri Lankans are leaving the country in droves looking for better opportunities outside in the Middle East or in Southeast Asia or even in places like Korea. But they have such a huge amount of debt. In fact, they are still negotiating with many countries like China, India, Japan. The Sri Lankan government has to make very difficult choices in the coming months or even in the coming year. So the people are very angry. But how can they show their anger? Because the protest movement is gone. Now, this anger can be replicated or shown only in terms of election. That is what many people are asking. That Sri Lanka should have elections soon so that they can elect a new government they can trust.
Ambrosanitarajan. Tuesday was the last day of the hearing in court behind closed doors for the Russian anti-war activist Alexandra Skotchilenko. The St. Petersburg artist was detained in March 2022 after changing price tags in supermarkets with stickers containing information about the war in Ukraine. After more than 18 months, her trial is in its final stage. 33-year-old Alexandra faces a sentence of up to 8 years in a labour camp. Our reporter Anastasia Zlatopolsky met up with Sasha's older sister Anna, who lives in France.
Dozens came to the St. Petersburg court to support Alexandra. It's her last hearing before the verdict is announced. She is now one of the most known political prisoners in Russia. With Alexandra accused of discrediting the Russian army, the prosecutor has requested a sentence of 8 years at a work colony.
She's a symbol of everything Russian authorities hate. She's artistic, fragile, lesbian, having a Ukrainian surname. She closed all the check marks of whom you should not be.
I met Alexandra's older sister Anna in Paris, where she lives. She got permission to visit her sister in prison several times over the past year and a half.
It's a torture forced on her. Why is she there? It's not a place for her. What did she do? She didn't hurt or kill anyone, break or steal anything. She didn't burn a military recruitment office. She didn't solicit anyone to any activity. She didn't even organize any political act. It's a mistake.
Alexandra suffers from celiac disease and chronic heart problems, as well as neurological disorders. In detention, her state of health has become critical.
There was even a moment when she cried in court. It's a sign that her strengths are on the limit. I am proud of her. She is extremely brave. She is the most courageous person I know. But this pride is with pain and bitterness. It is destructive for her.
Anna is not giving up hope, but understands her sister might face a tough sentence.
Imagining the sentence that Sasha will get, that she will have to live in the work colony with those health issues. We will do whatever is possible to support her, but I'm terrified. We are all aware that at any moment Sasha can die behind bars, in the detention center, being escorted to prison in the work colony. Any day could be her last day.
That report was by Anastasia Zlatopolsky. Local officials in Northern Ireland are considering whether to bring in specialist help to identify the source of a mysterious nighttime humming noise. Some residents in the town of Omagh in County Tyrone have complained that the noise is keeping them awake. And despite efforts, the reason for the persistent drone is still unknown. Our island correspondent Chris Page reports from the town.
This town is a buzz, but it's not to do with conventional nightlife. A few weeks ago, people began to notice a mysterious noise.
I've heard it.
What's it like?
You can hear it when you're lying in bed at night time.
It's like vibrating noise, real loud one at night, about 12, 1 every night. Mm-hmm.
Does it keep you awake?
Or? Not really, no, but it did the first night. Yeah. Sort of used to it now.
There are others who knew about the hum, but haven't heard it with their own ears.
I haven't heard a thing. I don't know where it's coming from.
Bit of a mystery, huh?
It is a mystery.
Yeah. Is it causing a bit of talk around the town?
Maybe someone snoring beside you, maybe?
You never know.
You never know.
They say that's annoying a lot of people, but never heard. Maybe my hearing's bad.
Now, if you go into the meadows and you shout hello, you'll hear it over at the golf club because they're an echo.
Right.
So there's an echo.
So there could be acoustics at play here.
There could.
Some theories about the source of the hum are that it's a factory, farm machinery, or water infrastructure. But Fermanagh and Doma Council says the investigation is challenging, partly because the noise is being heard over a wide area. It's looking into using specialist equipment or an expert company to try to solve the mystery and stop the sound. for now, the Uma hum is an unexplained phenomenon.
Chris Page. And that's all from us for now. But before we go, I'd just like to tell you about a special podcast we're planning. At the end of this month, world leaders are meeting at the UN Climate Change Conference in Dubai. Do you have a question for them? We would like to hear from you if you do. No question on climate change is too big or too small. Email us at the usual globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. We hope to hear from you soon. You can also find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Philip Bull, and the producer was Phoebe Hobson. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
As a major research institution, Arizona State University offers the most online bachelor's degree programs, along with world-class faculty and dedicated support. Discover why ASU is ranked number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Tap to learn more.